Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the March 11th, 2024 meeting of general meeting of the Gustavus City Council. It's about 7 o'clock. Madam Clerk, could you conduct a roll call and announce whether a quorum is present?
Yes. Vice Mayor Taylor?
Here.
Councilmember Driscoll?
Here.
Councilmember Patrick?
Here.
Councilmember Makoviac?
Here.
Councilmember Bishop?
Here.
Councilmember Taylor?
Here.
Madam Mayor?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Okay. And I'm going to ask, we're going to be giving our names each time we speak for purposes of the recording. And so I'll ask if you could raise your hand above your head if you wish to speak, make sure that I can see everybody. And if I'm missing someone who's raising their hand in Zoom or unmuting themselves, if someone could let me know. And we will start with the vision statement. I believe Vice Mayor Brian Taylor will be reading it.
We envision a distinctive community that prospers while and by protecting its natural resources, with a sustainable economy and infrastructure that assures public health and safety while promoting personal development and initiative, and where all members take social responsibility and actively participate in decision-making affecting growth, development, regulation, and enforcement, and in which people retain a closeness with and caring for each other individually and collectively while working together to accomplish community goals and preserve community traditions.
Thank you. And before we get started, we'll ask that people mute the phones and keep the video off. The meeting will be recorded and posted to the website, and the packet will be projected and is being projected and will also be available online at www.gustavus-ak.gov. We'll start with the approval of the minutes. Councilmember Moskoviac, would you like to make a motion?
I move to approve by unanimous consent the February 20th, 2024 meeting minutes.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. And that was Councilmember Bishop who seconded. We'll get used to this. Okay. It is moved by Councilmember Moskoviac and seconded by Councilmember Bishop to approve by unanimous consent the 2/20/24 general meeting minutes. The minutes have been previously distributed. Do any members of the public wish to offer any additions or corrections to the minutes? Okay. And do any council members wish to make any additions or corrections to the minutes? Are there any objections to approving by unanimous consent the February 20th, 2024 general meeting minutes? And hearing none, the motion is passed by unanimous consent. The next item is Mayor's request for agenda changes, and I have a few. The first is that we have two visitors that I would like to call before the committee staff reports. The first is Mark Berry from Berry Specialty Contracting to talk to us about fire hall heating issues. The second will be Claire Geldof, our public health nurse, who's visiting from Juneau. The next item is I'd like to consolidate items number 10 and 13, which deal with the same issue. It's the item 10 is to approve CY24-09 resolution for Harbor Tract B2 purchase. And then the item 13 is the project development form for purchase of that Salmon River Harbor Tract and adjacent towns. Is that okay? Okay. And then let's see.
You're just removing it? Was that?
I would like to take them at the same time.
Oh, at the same time. Oh,
yeah, okay. So that because they're dealing with the same issue.
Sure.
The next item will be number 14, which creation of land advisory committee. We're going to be talking about that in April. This is so it'll be if we want to discuss it tonight, maybe we'll have a report by Councilmember Taylor on that issue. And then the last item that I would like to change is to move item number 15 to new business as the first item, and it's the to approve HDR scoping document to provide City of Gustavus with capital improvement plan project evaluation for grant competitiveness. And that is to accommodate our city administrator, Kathy Leary, who is traveling, and she is an hour ahead of us, so that we'll give her an opportunity. If she wants to leave, she'll be able to leave a little early. Are there any objections to the changes? Okay, seeing none. All right. Okay, we will move on to committee and staff reports. And, I'm sorry. Are there any requests from the council for agenda changes? And are there any?
Mark Mary first. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. Okay. All right. Okay, the first item then will be Mark Berry to come forward to speak to the committee, to the council. Actually, Mark, could you come over here where there's a microphone?
Can you hear me? That work? Okay. My name is Mark Berry. I own Berry's Specialty Contracting, plumber heater in town, plumber heating guy in town.
Thank you. About heating issues in the fire hall, and you've provided us with an estimate for fire hall replacement heating scenario. There have been questions and thoughts about whether to have to start with phase one and phase two, phase one being a Toyo, the phase two being a heat pump. And there's a former council member has expressed an interest in having a mechanical engineer. And we don't know whether that's needed or not. And are you willing to just kind of launch and tell us about what your thoughts about the heating?
Sure. Yeah. The building definitely needs its heating system addressed. Mm-hmm. That I'm surprised that furnace is still running, and I'm really happy. I don't know if you read through my last invoices. I think I made notes on it that it actually had a little event when I started it up last time and about knocked me off of that platform. So I was committed to having something happen over there. Let's see. So I'll give a little synopsis. I know there's interest in utilizing heat pumps like you have here over there. And it's a little above my pay grade to figure out how to do that. If it was going to be strictly a heat pump setup building, we would need somebody that knows what they're talking about to size it correctly for a building like that, mostly because the building's, you know, it's not an airtight, fairly poorly insulated, you know, has issues. And so my suggestion was just what we had there is, you know, you utilize heat pumps for the upstairs. And since you have a fuel tank, throw a Toyo in downstairs. So, you know, and that's kind of where I ended up as far as the estimate that I gave you.
Do you have any thoughts about whether we need a mechanical engineer for the design to install the Toyo and the heat pump upstairs?
I don't think you would for the Toyo and the heat. I mean, one of the biggest worry in my head is if you were setting up heat pumps is, you know, because they operate so much differently than a Toyo. The balance is important to have something that fit that building. And that's just, and plus they're harder to modify. I currently can install heat pumps that they all contain their own refrigerant because I do not have a permit to do refrigeration work. I've just never gone down that route yet. So I can't install commercial large setups, which is probably what it would take over there. You know, you could either put two or three systems like this in the building. That's certainly a possibility. But it just, in my mind, it would make sense to, if you are going to strictly heat that building with heat pumps, you would probably want to have an engineer go through it and say, okay, this is what we're going to need. They're going to over-design it, you know, and it's going to cost because that's what they do. I feel comfortable with the Toyo thing because it's so easy to add another Toyo, because I don't think one Toyo downstairs would be enough for that space on the coldest of temperature. You know, if there's a fire or having a run and you got the doors open for a while and all of that, and expect the building to be warm when you come back, you know, even one large Toyo probably wouldn't suffice. But you can add another one fairly simply. You could essentially try to do the same thing with these smaller mini split heat pump systems. Like, well, we could just add another one, you know, which you certainly could, and then just add another one, all separate things, you know, because it can't tie them together without being a refrigeration person. And plus they're not designed that way. Like the system here, you couldn't add another head. It's set up for two. And if you wanted a third, you would have to change all attributes to it. So
actually you can put two more on it.
Go yeah, ahead. Right. Well, you could, but you'd have to break into the refrigeration side at this point. Nope. Really? On that they went
just another quick disconnect.
Well, that's true. These Mr. Cool setups have that. Right.
I'll leave it to you.
Yeah. No, I mean that's a good point. I'm not familiar with these Mr. Cool setups that come with the prepackaged refrigeration lines. You know, so that might be an option over there that could be utilized if you can plug into it. The systems I put in, to break into them, which you could do, you would have to have refrigeration expertise to add to it. And of course, make sure that the outdoor unit is sized for, you know, for future growth.
Okay, thank you. And I guess before I hand you off to council members for clarifying questions, I've failed to point out that you've done plumbing and heating on the building itself, and we're our last volunteer fire chief.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And I guess council member Taylor, would you like to speak?
Yeah, on the Toyo, can you choose a Toyo that has the same capacity as the existing furnace?
No, not so much.
Maybe not that big.
I'm not sure what the rating of that furnace is, but I don't think so, because the largest one is 40,000 BTUs, I think. And the furnace is probably capable of more than that. I couldn't say for sure. And like I say, I think it would be a little, even if the Toyo was heating the downstairs, you know, I would worry that on a really cold day that it might take a long time to build it back up, you know. And at currently there's one spot that would be relatively easy and inexpensive to add a Toyo to. Throwing a Toyo on the other side of the building to make it more uniform, you'd have to have the fuel line go up and over the door, and it just, you know, adds to it. So the idea is like, oh, you could put one in, and if it was an issue, you could add another one. But and honestly, I like the idea of having everything balanced out perfectly, but I just feel like that building is past the point of its prime and balancing perfectly. Mm-hmm. And so that seems like a relatively easy option, something right. Like that.
Thank you, Mac. Do any other council members want to speak and want to ask questions? Good. Thank you very much for joining.
Sure. Yeah, and I'm happy to answer any question. If anyone wants to call at any time, just off whenever, I'd be happy to talk. I love talking about stuff.
Okay.
Thank you.
Don't worry about it.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
So, thank you.
Great. And Claire Geldof, our public health nurse. Yeah.
Good evening to the council and Gus Davis. My name is Claire, and I've met with some of you before, but I'm here this week for an annual spring migration over to Gus Davis from my home in Juneau, where I'm based out of. I was born and raised over in Juneau and have been practicing nursing in Alaska, but came back for 13 years now. So my background is mostly in public health, and that was my true calling. I was finishing up my senior year at the University of Vermont and was fortuitous to end up in Bangladesh on a public health rotation as I was trying to imagine myself working in a large-scale hospital system and kind of floundering with that thought. Spending time in Bangladesh kind of united me with community level and systems level work and doing some of the individual care plans, but really kind of looking at what we can do with communities to support growth and health. And I loved hearing your vision statement tonight. As long as it was, and I followed and heard public health in that vision statement. So, this week at the school, I will be doing some vision hearing screening for students. And then it's been lovely to work with the new principal, Karen McSpatten, and the teaching team. And I look forward to getting to know them throughout the week. In terms of public health and just kind of our core services and what we're working on, I think that like the rest of our communities in the state, And as far as my role goes, I'm an itinerant public health nurse for the Southeast region. The exception to that is I do go to Cordova, which is not considered Southeast, but I go there every month. And then I go to Yakutat about 3 or 4 times a year. And I usually have come over to Gustavus once or twice, just depending on the needs. I also visit Pelican, Cake, Tenneke, and then Elfin Cove when they need help in Elfin. So I will say that kind of moving through the COVID-19 pandemic, I think really shifted a lot of our practices and required all of us at the community level to kind of think creatively and come back to kind of what we can do. Now seems really important to do just that, is kind of come back to community and focus on health promotion and prevention opportunities. In the past year, I've had many school districts kind of reach out and ask for information on vaping and information on fentanyl. And some of this, I think, is in response to looking at our staggering numbers of health indicators for the state, and then also looking at headlines that represent a lot of what's happening in our state, whether that's happening in Gustavus or not. Like, we have very high overdose rates in Alaska right now. We have very high death rates related to firearm. So, you know, I sit in my office when I'm in Juneau and kind of look at these rates. We have very high rates of syphilis in Alaska right now. We have an increasing climb of HIV new infection rates, which, you know, we have all the tools we need to prevent that in 2024. So there's a lot of work to be done in public health, but it's really up to kind of working with communities to establish what's right fit for them. I can come in, but it's always with the intention to work with communities, never doing anything to or for communities, because I'm only here every so often. So my intention tonight is just to kind of reintroduce those ideas and make myself available. It's been lovely to kind of connect back with, even seeing folks come into the building tonight. And then I have my contact information, but I think just to conclude, I think there's a lot of things that we can do together that can help improve some of these dark side metrics that we look at. But I will say that when I receive emails or phone calls from school districts that are asking, hey, come talk to us about fentanyl, or please come talk to our students about vaping or bullying, I recognize that this is not necessarily a one-time lesson that's taught. And I think everyone would agree, this is a really long game. And we know that, like, our educators, volunteers, everyone in this community is kind of doing what they can to help with protective factors that balance out that equation of adversities. And that is kind of finding trusted adults, doing after-school programming, and plugging in at that community level that can make huge impacts on a person's overall health. So I make myself available if you have any questions. I look forward to meeting with you guys throughout the week. And yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you, Claire. Do council members have any questions or comments?
I have a question. Taylor.
Mike Taylor.
For the record. Hi, Claire. It's great to have you back in Gustavus, and I'm really pleased that you are spending time this week at the school, and I think it's an opportunity to make progress there where we haven't been as successful in the past. So this is great. Is the school the place where we can, I guess, leverage your services the best? Are there other, what sorts of points would you apply your services to the best effect in Gustavus?
Yeah, thank you, Council Member Mike Taylor. It's funny, there's two Taylors too. I will say that as a public health nurse, working with schools is quite an engaging opportunity because as far as I'm concerned, a school is like the heartbeat of the community. So I think for me, my work is kind of teaming up with Karen and seeing what opportunities we have available between them and kind of our teams at public health and offering more education and just really listening to kind of what are the needs here? What can we do together? Aging in Southeast Alaska is another area, and that's kind of a different culture of our communities, is how do we help people age in place? And that comes up quite a bit in my work. And there's not a magical answer, right? These are like long-term visions and ideas that we need to kind of bring to fruition. So I think, yes, I would love to continue working with the schools. And then as you guys, as a council, as you guys kind of identify what health needs are coming up or health ideas, what health questions are coming up, sometimes the best hour of work can be sitting down and just putting heads together to formulate what those needs look like. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, are there
Taylor?
Yeah, Taylor again. Mm-hmm. Are there opportunities to work with the clinic? They're not, of course, part of the city.
Sure.
And are there things that the city should be coordinating or working together with you and the clinic?
Yeah,
that sort of thing.
I think I work closely with the search clinic as well. So there's a coordinated effort, like even before coming over here, is just kind of reaching out to your fire chief and clinic and the school and just touching on those points. So you can rely on us to kind of do that job. And if we're not, too, if there's a bridge or connection that we need to be making, just letting us know too, hey, why don't you think about talking to the park service, you know, or things like that. You guys really are the experts of your own communities. And so sometimes I'll reach out to you and say, what's going on with this? Or how would you approach that? But I think I would conclude just to say that I don't always have the best idea of what's happening here. And so I welcome just emails or phone calls but knowing too that it doesn't necessarily mean that I'll drop down from a helicopter and be able to go sample everyone's water to see if the Giardia is like systemic or if it's just like, oh, really? Like I just drank a little bit out of the stream and man, I got sick as a dog. But yes, I think it's very fluid and I feel like we're coming back to this community and connections where maybe 2 or 3 years ago, that was very difficult to do just with competing priorities. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Claire. Yeah.
Okay. And we will now start with the, go ahead, Janine, and give your name, yeah, please.
This is Janine, and I apologize, but I was a little slow on this. I actually had a question for about the heat pump. Can I still ask that?
Sure. And Mike and Mark, can you come up to the phone, Michael?
So yeah, thank you. So what I'm just would like to have clear is it seems that there's two different types of heat pumps that maybe have been discussed. One is the Mr. Cool, and one is the other system that you were putting in. And it's not clear to me what the difference is between those two systems, particularly because I guess I was thinking wrong. I thought the Mr. Cool didn't need to have the same
refrigerant,
but and then you're saying that what you're putting in, you can't do that either, and so I'm really confused.
Yeah, there are quite a few different companies making them. Mr. Cool is kind of unique in that it's set up as a do-it-yourself kind of setup. It's not so much the refrigerant. I started off with I picked the Daikin line because they're a good product, and have just stuck to that. The difference is the unit itself comes with refrigerant in it. A certain amount lets you use up to 30 feet of the lines that run between the indoor unit and the outdoor unit that are hidden behind the plastic outside on that. Those lines have to be cleared of atmosphere and pressure tested to 500 or a little over 500 PSI. Because the refrigerant can't mix with any moisture or water at all. That's what gums them up and makes them not produce heat and stuff. So you typically you would have some tools to draw the air out, take it down to a vacuum to outer space levels once you've installed the unit. Before you open up the refrigerant and flood the system, you test the lines and pressure test them and then suck all the air out. So there's no moisture in there at all. So that's kind of a process was kind of the norm for quite a while for any air conditioning units, all the time. And when they fail is usually because the refrigerant leaks out and air leaks in. It's kind of a mixture of both. These Mr. Cools came up with kind of a great idea of they pre-charge the lines. So you buy a lines, I think, in 1 foot or 5 foot increments.
Six. 16 or 25 feet.
Okay, right. And then you don't cut the lines. They have special connectors to do that. And basically it removes needing to have the pressure test to 550 PSI is, a bottle of nitrogen and some fancy tools, and to draw vacuum down to outer space is a vacuum. It's the stuff that tech people have, but most people don't. And so these are basically something that anybody can install. They're packaged with a refrigerant just like the other units, but they have these pre-vacuumed lines essentially. And the only reason I haven't gone for them is I can't control, if the connection isn't made right and I've charged it, I'm hosed, because I can't put more refrigerant in there. A refrigerant person in Juneau could certainly do that. So I've just stuck to the ones I know where I can pressure test them and feel comfortable about it working, because it's kind of my deal is at least for the first year on warranty. So that's why I've just stuck to the one line, and I tend to not go this route. But the one plus about those is, any contractor in town can install them, or anybody could install them, depending on what you wanted to do, without having to have the nitrogen bottle and vacuum. But if either system has an issue, we're going to need a refrigerant person to add more refrigerant. Maybe one of these days I'll finally get that permit, but having zero experience with refrigerants, I've just been reluctant to go down that route. No. It'll have to happen. The first heat pump I installed in my shop was almost nine years ago now. And so at some point it'll quit or somebody will cut a line or do something like that. But at this point, it's like those refrigerators and freezers in town, is we'd have to get somebody from Juneau out here to deal with it. Until someone shows up, and you know, if we can get a refrigerant person in town, that would be amazing. That would be ideal. A young refrigerant person.
Yeah,
mind you. Somebody younger than me.
Okay.
So, answer your question.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah.
So, sorry, Rachel Patrick, commenting. So to summarize, if we did go with the bigger heat pump system, if there was a failure, and it's the middle of the night cold snap, our fire hall is up to freeze and damage to be done because we don't have a backup system, something that you could work on or anybody else could work on, like a Toyo or a boiler system.
Right. Yeah, that's the problem with any system, regardless of what it is backup. And I think plug-in electric heaters are probably going to be everyone's backup, you know, just because that's one thing that'll easy to do. And it's these heat pumps in general, I mean, when I first was installing them, they were thought of as a secondary heat for our locale, because they haven't made it as north as Fairbanks yet, because it's just hard to pull that much heat out of it. But they're getting so much better now that it's turning around, and they're starting to be used as primary heat sources. Out of the systems that I've installed in town in those 9 years, none of them have had to be worked on. I can't say that for my Toyo stoves and stuff or anything else. So,
yes, I got one more quick question.
Okay, Councilmember Taylor.
Yeah, Taylor, what's the largest Daikin in BTU per hour? This one was 36,000, but
yeah,
I think Daikin's got more. They make one bigger.
It's up in that range. I think you can get a 5-head system. And that's just in the mini splits, you know, because you can get a system that's as big as you want. You just have to, as far as the ones that come packaged with refrigerant, I think their 5-head system is pretty close to the same 30,000 or 40,000, you know. They all seem to limit out kind of at that rate, and then they turn over to the more commercial setups, as far as I know.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Mark. Okay, and now we're going to have committee reports and staff reports. And the presenters will be invited to speak. Please state your name, department, and try and keep reports to 5 minutes or less. The council will then have an opportunity to ask clarifying questions. And which librarian do we have tonight? Okay. Do you want to bring a second chair, perhaps? Thank you, Diesel.
Yeah. Do you have to hit a button?
We're on.
Okay. All right. Hi.
Hi.
This is my first time doing this, so please forgive me for asking questions like, are we on? I am Melissa Gome, and I am the Library Administrative Director. And
I'm Leanne Weichel, and I'm the Library Services Director.
And we are going to present our quarterly staff report. And so we're just going to start with the stats, which you guys all have our report. Our stats are actually up a bunch from our last quarter. I was not able to compare it to last quarter because I wasn't able, or not last quarter, but last year, to see what those numbers were. But I can guarantee you that we did not have 516 people come on February of last year. So we've had a lot of really good stat ups. Yeah.
The next thing on the report is, well, first of all, I'm with Lisa. I'm really proud of what's happening at the Gustavus Public Library right now. We've been working hard, and it's showing. And then the next thing is the public outreach topic. And what happened right before I was hired is the past directors, Michelle Snowden and Jen Gardner, did a public survey asking questions about when should it be open, a variety of things like that. And it's 3 years later now, and we feel it's time to do that again. So we're look for a survey that will come out to the public. We'll probably put it live mid-April, but our goal is to have it done by the end of March. It will ask questions like, you know, what are our patrons' wishes and wants? What materials, books, DVDs, kits are they that do they want? What do they think we need? What programs and services are already meeting their needs? What would they like to see more of or less of? Just getting the flavor of what people in Gustavus would like to see in their public library. It was super beneficial to Jesse and I, and now Melissa, to have those survey results from before. So we hope to have as good of a response and have them direct what we do next, what we do for the next 3 years in Gustavus. We've had feedback in the past. We had a passionate person give us feedback about how they felt like we were doing too much youth programming and not an adult programming. We took that to heart. We've completely expanded our adult programming and done many, many additional things with that. And that came from public input. So we're gonna ask the council to look at it. Shelley and Kathy have already asked to see it before we publish it, but we're looking for two more council members.
At least. We would love everyone's if they all.
We don't know how many we can have help us and then we get over the over too many council members in a room. Lisa?
So if you want to send it to me to send to them, they can send their responses back to me. Okay. And then I can send them to you. As long as they're not responding to each other, that would be acceptable for them all to participate in that feedback.
Okay, awesome. Okay. That's what we'll plan to do. We'll send it to Lisa, send it out to everyone. And then if you have input, we'd be open to your input. And that's input before it's going to go out to the public. And then we'll ask you as council members and citizens of Gustavus to also take the survey when the time is here. Next on our...
We're going to skip to grants.
Yeah, we're skipping to grants. We're going to come back to We Love Our Volunteers, but that's big.
We are going to skip to grants, which is all me. And so the PLA grant is due on April 1st, and I am knee deep in it. I am hoping to have it done by the end of the week, and I'm going to send it to, I believe, Shelley and Kathy in order to have you guys look at it, but then also, you know, see if there's anything else that needs to be changed or whatever. And also, so, wait, hold on. I have the notes here. Don't have them right here. Okay, well, so Leanne's ACF grant. Here we go. So the ACF grant, which is the Alaska Community Fund grant, which is something that we got last fiscal year, we are still using that and are hoping to continue that in the future. But right now we still have enough money in it. And one of the big things that we are using it for is the Books for Babes, which is a really important program that connects parents who aren't necessarily readers or are readers, but how to connect them and their brand new babies with reading. And we have like 10 to 12 babies coming supposedly in Gustavus in this new year, in the next year. So this is a really important place for us to be having money to put into a program. Oh, I was going to ask you about one specifically.
What one?
Oh, no, that's something else. Never mind.
Okay, we'll come back to it. So the next thing in the report is past, current, and upcoming programming for winter 2024. That is for December, January, and February. And the list is there. I wanted to note that it doesn't include Learn Livy with Leanne. I hosted two of those during that time, and it wasn't on that list. I broke that list down in a more data-driven way, and that's what I want to tell the council right now. If you look at that list, there is a total of 23 programs, and then if you look at it, there's 14 adult programs, 5 teen programs, and 27 youth programs. There is 6 weekly programs, 3 monthly programs, 7 programs that just happen one time, and 1 that happens twice a month or biweekly. There are 2 programs out of all of those programs. There's 2 programs that needed volunteers outside of the desk volunteers that we rely on so heavily to work at the desk and check in and out of books. There are 8 programs that are completely, well, predominantly self-sufficient. The maker meetings, the plain air group, the everybody welcome library band, these happen outside of library hours. The people who own them have filed the paperwork in order to have an access code. They know how to keep their numbers. They leave me a note. I make them a flyer, and they pretty much happen on their own. And that has been one of the ways we've expanded the actual use of the library so much, because beyond our hours, the library is full, and it's awesome. There are 11 programs that are run by library staff, and there were 2 programs over 4 days that were actually paid programs, meaning that the outside groups utilized the library meeting rooms and paid for the opportunity to do that, which meant that brought income into the library. So I'm hoping that looking at the programs in that way is helpful to you. The next thing I want to focus on is the 2 in the spotlight. And the one I love the most, like I love, love, love this program, is Pizza Puzzles and Games. We started hosting it in November. It is for all ages. It happens at 3:30 and goes till 6. And we do it first and third Wednesdays of the month. And we purposely and intentionally do it opposite of Kids Night at the GCC. And I didn't put pictures in here, and I regret that. So go to the library Facebook page, because there is multi-generational people at this. There are, you know, our seniors playing Skippo with third graders, and the seniors kind of the ones that are the poor sports when they lose. And there's puzzles being made, and this is not for kids. This is about building community and interacting with your community. And I have loved it. And we serve pizza because Papa Murphy's, if you order 5 family size, they don't charge us to use seaplanes. And it's awesome. And it's just something that's become a real joy in my week. And the other one that I wanted to make sure got in the spotlight was the celebration of Kiechk, the whale mural. And the pictures are there. I think that tells a story. If people haven't been in the library yet to see that, they need to come in.
You really need to come. Wonderful. Please come in. Even if you just walk in the door, you're going to be like blown away. It's amazing.
Jess Mulligan is an incredible gift to this town in many ways, but definitely it with her art. She far exceeded our expectations of what it would turn out like. All right. Last in our official report is
just trainings, which is important, but also we're excited about trainings. Lots of things are coming out. I am planning to attend multiple ALA learning opportunities. Leanne is also looking into multiple. They're constantly coming out, and we are just looking for different things that can be an asset to Gustavus and the community, and how we can connect with the community, engage with, and also, well, not also, but yeah, I'm gonna stop.
And then that's our official report, but Mayor Shelley asked us to talk more about the feedback that was given when Kyle and Rachel went to the community meeting about comments for the library. And so that would, like, if you could go back, I don't know who's in charge of this, if you could go back to our, we love our volunteers.
Yeah.
That part is awesome. Volunteers have also been at the heart of the library. It's a longstanding tradition in Gustavus to be a community of volunteerism. And it's evident at the library. Essentially, I have a job that allows me to work up to 30 hours. Melissa has a job that allows her to work up to 30 hours. That's 2 part-time jobs to get a full-time position, plus a little more. Our volunteers, when you add up the hours that our volunteers work, they work another full job. They work 27 hours a week, and they do it in 1.5 or 2 or 2.5 hour increments, but that translates to 1,400 hours a year. That's considerable. Essentially, there's 30 people on our volunteer list, but it's essentially 12 people who do all of that. And it changes. Right now is a difficult time, and it has been. This is my third winter here, and it's true. It's difficult because people are leaving. They want to get out of Dodge for the winter, and we're struggling to cover all of our desk shifts. We have one that we are both, Melissa and I, have been rotating to cover over the last couple of weeks. We're going to come back to that a little more, but keep in mind that big number. And then that kind of directly relates to some of the feedback that Kyle and Rachel got at the community. And Melissa is going to take points 1 and 2.
Yes. Okay. So this comes from the Coffee with Council, which I'm not sure if that was given to y'all, but this is just a couple things that Shelley asked us to speak to directly. And the first 2 points are, we need more volunteers and younger volunteers, and the current volunteers we have are overwhelmed, especially the library volunteers. And so for number 2, I am very much hoping that the survey that we're going to put out, we're going to get a lot of information back, not just from our volunteers, but from the community, to find out if our hours need to change, if maybe something could change that we can take off so much of that burden from our volunteers. But also, we do have more coming back. Winter is difficult, but we are definitely hoping to, you know, remedy that issue just with more information from the community, or at least partly. But then the other thing is needing more volunteers and younger volunteers. My first reaction to that was incentives, which, you know, I mean, volunteers, you don't necessarily think incentives, but we need incentives for our volunteers. And Leanne actually has a good anecdote for that, for when she was in Minnesota and a young single mother, or not single, but sorry, wasn't a single mother.
I was very blessed with my partner.
She was just a young mother.
We moved to Lakeville, which is an outstanding community, and they had an incentive program because they wanted to get young people. And our young people are working, raising families, taking care of their homes. They're already have really, really full days. And if you look at the core of our 12 that we say are our most reoccurring, nine of them probably fall into already retired, so they have freedom to choose what their time is. We're fortunate to have one young mom and her daughter. Our youngest volunteer is 6. She comes every week and she's really good at things that she's learned to do. And we have a young her mom, and then we have another, actually have two other young, what I would call young volunteers, so that's 4 out of our 12, which is pretty awesome. When I was in Lakeville, they had this incentive program. For X amount of hours that you volunteered, you got a gift card, and you could use it to a coffee shop. You could take it to the local grocery store and get cheese. I mean, there was a whole bunch of different ways that you could. And I wouldn't say that's the only reason I participated, but man, it sure helped me justify why I was taking the time away from my family to do that, or why I gave up my sleep to participate. And so maybe the city, in conjunction with the library and the DRC and the community chest and the community center, could look at something like that.
We're hoping to figure that out, like collectively, all of us together. Maybe we could get together and figure out if maybe we could get some donations from different places in town, or, you know, something.
There were 2 more points on that. Did you finish with everything?
I did, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. There were 2 more points. And can I read them from yours?
Totally.
And Kyle and Rachel, we're going to call on you to clarify. It says, there's too many scheduled events with little turnout, heavily relying on volunteers. And this is in regards to the library. And there seems to be a general support of simplifying library events and focusing more on providing services such as supporting people who don't own computers and assistances, filing for PFD, resume work, heating assistant, et cetera. So we're looking for just a little bit more clarification on context, because it said there were 17 to 25 community members. So was it like one person who said that? Was it the group all agreed with that? It kind of leads to why, and kind of reinforces why we're doing the public outreach survey we're doing, but can you, either of you, add to that?
Yeah, this is Rachel Patrick speaking. Thank you. And Kylie could jump in to clarify, but how that went down at the coffee with council was we asked the questions about if anybody had any comments, concerns, ideas for any city-run program or department. And there was only one person that really spoke up and started that that conversation about the library. And then she did mention about the fatigue of the volunteers, and all of that was pretty much verbatim what she had spoke about. And then other people then bounced off ideas, maybe one or two handful of other people were talking about other services that they would like to see, like the computers, the PFV, all of that. So it was about a handful, about five people. Yeah.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you. One, I very intentionally included the fact that we don't use volunteers for our programs very much. I detailed that earlier. There's two programs that have relied on volunteers in the last 3 months. And one of them is Legos with Annie. And Annie comes in and she does that all by herself. And maybe she would be okay with somebody else doing it, but I don't know about that. Annie likes her Lego program.
Yeah, she
and
does.
A very big thank you to that. And then the library relies on volunteers to help us with the changing over of the story walk. So the story walk is something we run. And a big thank you to Martina, Sylvia, and Gus, and Jane, and Greg. Those are the volunteers that do that work for us. So I'm not sure where this person's perception was or where it came from, but it's not entirely accurate.
Well, and I wanna jump in here and just say that I'm actually really appreciative of the fact that you guys had this conversation, because I've worked in libraries for 20 years. And this is something that I did know about and haven't really brought into Gustavus yet, is that we should be having, we should have like appointments available, classes?
Support,
yes. So, so most libraries have the ability to, you know, you can just call them and be like, I need help with I don't know how to use Microsoft Word. I don't know how to, you know, get my
passwords fixed
or anything. Yeah.
Help with the PFD,
any of those things. And that is something that we should have. And I've already looked into it and have a whole bunch of avenues that we need to go down. We just need to figure out how to add it to our website. And then also schedule it between the two of us where people can just make an appointment, and we just need to get some, we need to get some rules passed between you guys with city council on like how much time they can take from us and what kinds of things that we are available to help them with, because we can't help them with financial situations or, you know, advice on, you know, certain types of things. Like, we have to be balanced. So
I think it will be super, super effective, because I ran two Learn Libby with Leanne, which is their eBooks, and those actually events weren't very well attended. But since I posted that we will help with that, I've had like a dozen people reach out and just done one-to-one with them. And it's been super helpful. We had a gentleman call in the other day. He had a laundry list. He wanted help with his PFD. He wanted to know how to register, and he's turned 16. He wanted to get that fishing license, and he wanted to know if he could come in right then. And it's like, and I couldn't. I had a program, but I made an appointment with him to come in the next day. And then there was that couple who shall remain nameless. It was arguing by the book drop about the passwords, and I let it go for a while. And then I finally went out the front and came around and said, "Oh, I'm just here to check the book drop. Can I help you with something?" And they downloaded their issues and they came in and we got passwords figured out. And I taught them how to do it, and then I knew their passwords, so that's not good. I'm like, okay, now that you know how to do it, before you can leave, you have to change them one more time, and I'm walking away. And they left with password happiness. And I think they're still married.
But that is a huge part of our responsibility, though, as librarians, that we should have.
That you should have marriage counseling.
Marriage counseling? No, definitely not. But we do need to have classes available for anyone to take for different kinds of, you know, Microsoft Word, Excel, how to sign up for how to vote, and, you know, just different kinds of things. And right. It's something that we should have had, and we've been available to do just by someone calling, but we're going to make it available on our website and, you know, put out a public announcement that this is something that we're going to do, because it's definitely 100% a librarian responsibility. Yep. So,
agreed.
Yeah.
We're open for any questions.
Councilmember Taylor, yep. Do you have a question? Yes.
Yeah. How about on your survey asking a question? If a respondent would like to join the volunteer team at the library.
Absolutely.
Since they're thinking about the library and respond, you know, doing the survey, maybe they'd say, yeah, I could help out.
I like how you worded that. Since you're thinking about that.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Councilmember Bishop.
Two things. Yes, Councilmember Bishop speaking. Thank you for a very thorough report. Really appreciate that, honestly. And I just wanted to highlight the thought about incentives. I think that's a huge and good idea, because bang for your buck for a $25 gift card is going to get you a significant amount of value in labor. And there's a lot of us out there that balance the amount of that we're able to give, whether that's time or money. And now in my third year of council, after a 3-year term on GCC, a donation of a gift card seems a little bit more palatable. And I'm sure that there are other people that would agree. So I think we could get a lot of mileage, at least with the concept of that.
And yeah.
I think that's a really good idea. Yeah. Secondly, the just to kind of touch on the coffee with council thing, you know, part of why we're doing this and also rotating location is so we can come to people and gather information. And so addressing that point is awesome and super helpful, but just keep in mind that that was, you know, one person's direct thought and a handful of people in a room that agree, and they just might, that's just their perspective, and they might,
yeah,
you know, just need a little bit more information. So topic to topic, I think that's part of the success of why we're doing this, is to go rotate through locations, get little sample size of different people's perspective and how they feel about specific things. So thank you for addressing that. But I think just getting that information out there is kind of why we're doing it. So
that's awesome. And that's why we wanted clarification.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. I do hope to actually attend those in the future too. I'm sad that I missed that one. I'm not quite sure what happens. But
okay, Councilmember Driscoll has a question.
Yeah, thank you. I do agree that the incentive thing is a good idea. And just brainstorming in my head here of something that the city has of value, perhaps, could be like a voucher to the DRC. Mm-hmm. And so we could, addition to maybe asking, you know, local businesses to donate or something, but perhaps we could have vouchers to the DRC. And then it could be given not only to library volunteers, but also to other volunteers, like the ones at the chest, and sort mm-hmm. of make it a city type thing, because they're giving to the city, and then the city is kind of giving back to them. Might just be one idea that flashed through my head.
That's awesome. Could they get like a gift certificate for the ambulance? That's like $20 to $25 too. No? Yes? Don't know. Sorry. Just an idea. We'll talk about it. Okay. All right. Thank you.
And then I did have just a clarifying question on the grants, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. On the Alaska Community Foundation's grant, are you saying that you're not needing to apply for it this year because you have carryover from the last year?
Yeah.
Okay. That's just wanted that clarified.
And it's used for the library literacy camps, our 1,000 books before K, and our books for babe. And the other ones, the first two have been solidly rolling for a while, but Books for Babes has been kicking off, and I've got a small group I've been meeting with every Friday, and I'm anticipating growth with 10 new babies.
11, 10, 12. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of babies coming.
Okay. All right. Buddy, don't see anybody online. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up is the Gustavus Visitors Association quarterly report. And I'd like to welcome and congratulate the new EMS coordinator, permanent coordinator, as she comes to the table. Leah Oaken.
Thank you very much. For the record, this is Leah Oaken, and thank you for that welcome. I'm in the capacity here of the president of the Gustavus Visitors Association. So this is our time for our quarterly report, our marketing plan, and our budget request. So I'll start with the quarterly report. And you've all had an opportunity to look at the report, and I'm not sure how many people we have listening from the outside world. Maybe Liesl, how many people do we have listening from the outside world who is not? Oh, quite a few. Okay. Okay. So for those people who are listening in from the outside world, in addition to the City Council, I just want to draw your attention to our mission statement of the GVA, which is on the second page there of our quarterly report. And the reason I draw your attention to this is because I think the Gustavus Visitor Association is not really an in-your-face organization. We're in the backgrounds. We're in the shadows, so to speak. So one could wonder, well, what do we do? What's our purpose? What's our vision? What's our mission? So if you look at that, I just wanted to draw that to your attention so that everybody is understanding what our vision is. Whether we like it or not, the Gustavus economy is based on tourism. So the focus of the Gustavus Visitor Association is to enhance the economies through tourism, to enhance tourism. And it's tourism that puts food on the table and that feeds our kids and our aging population here and our 12 new babies being born. So we're obviously an increasing population, and the increasing population needs an economy. And our economy is tourism. So it's a very important position the GVA has here in the shadows to put Gustavus on the forefront, on the map, for us to be that bright red object that shouts out when you're going to a checkout, you know, that one that your kid always wants. Well, when people are browsing through visiting Alaska, there's all these other places that are very accessible and easier to get to. And even to the Glacier Bay National Park, it's you know, it's accessible and easy to get to. But what about Gustavus? We want to really put Gustavus out there as, you know, don't forget about us. Here we are. Come spend time here. Come spend a bunch of time here. And come spend a bunch of money here. So that's our focus, is so that people know what we have in this world of craziness, of chaos that's going on out there in the real world. We have something very special to offer people here. We have an incredible amount of wildlife, and we have quiet, a place that is really difficult to get access with your cell phone. So it's a place of harmony, peace, quiet, and they can come here and actually breathe. And I recently just came back from a trip in England where I watched a lot of BBC television, and it's amazing how much Alaska shows are on television. And the reason is because there's lots of people out there in the world that have an interest in Alaska and want to come to Alaska. So we really want to make sure that Gustavus is seen and highlighted of all the wonderful things that we have here naturally. And that's what the Visitor Association does. We work on our website, we work on our outreach. So that's one aspect of what we do. I'll talk a little bit more later on about some of the other aspects. But so as you browse through our progress report, which is what we've been up to for the last 3 months, The next bit, I'll draw your attention to all the wonderful graphs we have. I'm turning the pages. Those are the algorithms, because we live in a world of algorithms. And in layman's terms, as you turn those pages, you'll see all the squiggly lines go up. That's a good thing. What that tells us is that there are more people clicking on our website, there are more people spending longer on our website, and there's more people who are engaging with our website, you know, finding something of interest, something which they want to navigate to or read more about. So our website is our sort of main landing pad, and that sort of draws people's attention, and that's what people, you know, people then come here. So our engagements are all increasing. So that's great. So that's what we've been up to so far. And, you know, the ongoing projects as we go on, as you move into the marketing plan for next year and our ongoing projects, it's all the usual suspects. You know, we continue our memberships with the Alaska Travel Industry Association, with Alaska Tourism. We continue our advertising with the Mileposts and the Alaska Magazine. And we're looking for increasing our marketing over to our Canadian neighbors. So we have international marketing and we have state marketing. So we're looking at marketing and our ongoing projects. Our big spending project last year that we asked for a bunch of money is the film. So where are we at with that? Well, yesterday I spoke to our film producer, which is Frostline. Forgotten what their name is. Frostline Entertainment, Frostline Organization, Frostline. Anyway, I haven't got it in front of me right this second. But his name is Richard Cooper. Wonderful guy. I spoke to him yesterday and I said, I am about to send you, actually, I've just sent you a whole bunch of video images. So that's what we were waiting on. That was the holding thing. We did a recent competition where we had a few prizes that would go to the best, or lack of better terms, the best video wildlife footage. Because when we had Frostline Studios, that's what they're called. When Frostline Studios were here last summer, they did fantastic interviews with lots of local people, and they got a really good flair of the personalities that are here, because we all know that that's actually what people are interested in. You can go and see a bear or a whale anywhere, but who lives there? So he got some wonderful footage and interviews with personalities here. But what he didn't get was the wildlife footage, because you really have to be at the right place at the right time. So we put out a competition and we got a bunch of video footage back just recently. I've gathered that off and sent it to him. And he said that he can have everything done and films made within the next couple of months. So we'll see that. And it's ongoing. So we're going to get those films. But then he also said, oh, you know, I can come back this summer and I can get more footage and we can continue on this project. So, and these are short films that are going to be applied to all sorts of digital marketing, website marketing, social media marketing, because everybody knows that people's attention span is about 3 minutes these days, and they don't want to read it, they just want to watch it. So that's why we realized that video footage is the way to go, and that's what we've got going on. So that'll be ready in the next couple of months. So that's the film. And then we've got lots of things on our marketing plan, other things that are ongoing. We've been working on our local aspect as well. We've got the information, the welcome board next to the dock at the Gustavus Beach. So we've taken out the Glacier Bay National Park information there. Apologies to those who work for the Glacier Bay National Park. But we really want to focus on Gustavus, because there's so much marketing that goes on for Glacier Bay National Park, but our focus is marketing Gustavus. So when people arrive, we really want to inform them about Gustavus and tell them what's here and things that are not necessarily obvious, the history of Gustavus. Things like that. So that's being updated. Hopefully that'll be ready by the summertime. The other ongoing things was this quarterly was obviously it's the membership drive, which everyone did signed up again. There was one individual who felt that they didn't want to pay the membership because they thought that the membership dues should be done away with and it should be a city expense. And I can see that point of view. So I'll just throw that out there and of continued conversation down the line somewhere. As far as at the back of our marketing plan, you'll see that I did a round circle. I'm just going to explain this for those people who are not looking at the screen. In the round circle is the Gustavus Visitor Association, and we feel that we are a pivotal point. We're well situated for serving sort of the quadrants of Gustavus, and those quadrants are the city of Gustavus, the city council who are in front of us. So the GVA works very closely with the city of Gustavus. We do things like, you know, putting out surveys for impacts of Alaska Airlines. We put out surveys of what's going on with the borough issues or the Nature Conservancy issues. So we work closely with the city of Gustavus with a lot of aspects. So that's one arm or one quadrant. Another quadrant is we work with the visitor-related businesses. So, you know, and potentially all businesses, considering that the economy all goes to tourism. But we act on behalf of the visitors, promoting the visitors, the businesses, and representing them to our best ability. So that's another arm. And then there's the community of Gustavus. We spend a lot of time trying to figure out how we can best serve the community. You know, we put out a news bulletin that has sort of the, you know, we try and put the calendar together so that people know what's going on, since we don't have the newsletter anymore. You know, we don't want it to be those people who are not on Facebook. You know, how do we reach those people? So we're really trying to do more community service, and we want to do more blogs and put those onto our websites, and those are going to be businesses and community information. And then we have the visitors, of course. You know, we are a resource for all the visitors who come here. What do we have? What kind of a town is it? Why would I like to go and visit Gustavus? So, you know, we're really a pivotal part of what drives people to visit Gustavus. So I just wanted to bring our presence out of the shadows and into the forefront of who we are and what we do. Money. So our budget request, the only aspect of our budget request that I'm going to add in at some point is, it was highlighted to me after the fact of putting together this report that we needed to put in a budget line that I may put an amendment in. We may try and scrape together with what we've got for finances and put a request in the next request, but it's about $1,000 more than what we've requested that we're going to put to website upgrades. So I realize that there's a bunch of things that are out of date and potentially going to cause problems and hazards, plugins, things like that, on our site that needs to be just changed. So it's about $1,000. And I don't know if anybody wants to add in anything with that. I'm looking at our website coordinator here, but he's gonna just jump in there and just add something.
Yeah, this is pretty nicely laid out in the. This is Brian Taylor, the acting as the web technician, I guess marketing technician is how I'm listed for the GVA. If you look at the goals and objectives section for our quarterly report, it's pretty well laid out. Essentially, the website is running software that has been abandoned by the person who created it. I have been manually issuing code fixes to maintain compatibility as other software we're using gets updated. And this is something that's not sustainable for the long term. So we're just going to work with the developer who built the site initially, and it actually has been priced out to be significantly less than I had anticipated. So it shouldn't be too huge of an undertaking, ideally. But yeah, an extra $1,000 to the budget request would be a big help in this.
Thank you, Brian Taylor, the GVA marketing technician. He just switched hats. So that's a budget item that you may see down the line that I'll put in a request for potentially. One last thing, and I'm sure I've exceeded my 5 minutes now, but an aspect that is also not on the reports that was also brought to my attention, well, it's been a continuous being brought to my attention, but it's something which I'm now actually addressing as far as the GVA. I've been working with Jim Kearns and looking back at the Gustavus Dock and the breakwater situation. I'm looking at Janine and thinking about one more thing. Okay, I've got two things. But you're going to see coming up over the next quarterly report and letters and information that the GVA is going to team up with Jim Kearns and bring back to the surface, looking at putting in a breakwater and what that would entail. And I'm going to bring this to your attention with a safety aspect, because from the GVA standpoint, obviously all of the vessels, the fishing vessels, and also the private vessels, utilize that dock. And as we all know, that when the wind picks up, it's hazardous, that dock. And so from the GVA point of view, as far as tourists, visitors, and people just enjoying the use of that dock, we really need to look in again at what that's going to take. And from my understanding, that it won't impact. So if you're thinking about, well, is it going to change the or impact the ferry service? From what I can understand, no. As the work goes on, or potentially the work goes on to put in potentially a breakwater there, it looks like it could be done without a break to the service of the ferry. Will it cost and be a financial deficit to Gustavus? No. From what I can understand, that it can be paid for through grants. What about the planning side of things? You know, who has to pay for anybody having a look at that? Well, also that's free by the let's say, I think it's the Department of Engineers. David Lovell. So I can see this could be potentially positive. We could potentially get a breakwater in with no financial deficit, no change in ferry service, and have a safer ferry dock. So I'm all for, as far as the GVA side of things, of pursuing this and working with Jim Kearns and working with City Council to see what that's actually going to take to make happen. My last item is beautifying Gustavus. The GVA would love to be a part of watering plants, doing whatever it takes to continue blossoming and blooming and beautification of Gustavus. And thank you for that opportunity. Thank you. Any questions?
But this Councilmember Driscoll has begun to take on, I think, project scoping. And we've had a lot of discussions over the years with Jim Kearns, but we've never really had a scoping document that talks about what is needed. And I think that's probably a good place to start. Councilmember Taylor, did you want to?
Remember, it's a state dock, mm-hmm. So the state has to do it. Mm-hmm. And it would be a state project. Okay. The state would own it, and the state would be responsible then for repairing it when it breaks or mm-hmm. replacing it when it needs to be replaced. It's not something that the city, in my view, should be spending money on, but we can certainly advocate for it. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a project, though, that would be a city contracted or owned project. Okay. But that's my view.
Mm-hmm. Do other council members have wish to ask clarifying questions? Okay. Thank you, Leah. Okay, next up is City Treasurer Ben Sadler.
Hi, City Treasurer Ben Sadler. Excuse me. Good evening, council members. I don't really have too much to say. Basically, I've been spending my time. We've just about finished up with the audit. I've been working through the budget process with the departments, with Kathy and Shelley, and I'm finalizing the CIP, which I've asked Lisa to put on the agenda for next month. So that should be all taken care of. We're at that time of the year where the income stream is slowed down. The expenses are going out the same as they always do. And that's it. That's all I have. Unless you guys have questions. Thank you.
Report is the city administrator, Kathy Leary, who is available with us on Zoom. Kathy, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. I had to get, I only have one screen here, so I'm okay. Trying to get to go back and forth. I just had to turn on my mic. Okay, so let me get to my report. Good evening, council members. For the record, Kathy Leary, and I am reporting on some of the activities that have occurred in the last month, but certainly not all of them. At the work session, I talked to you about meeting with Orlando of HDR when I was in Juneau to discuss a way to review all of our CIPs and other projects and scoping documents and make recommendations so that we could prioritize and take a more clear direction for funding sources, and that they could understand our projects. So when those funding sources became available, they could advise us. You have a draft scope for your review. The cost associated with this work, according to Aura, would be no more than $8,000. And I'm, you know, if we want to get a handle on all these funding opportunities and have access to subject matter experts, which their company has many, we really need to get this type of professional assistance, because tracking, while I can track some of this stuff, I can't track it all. And they also have done enough grants with the state and with departments and around the country, and have had enough of a success rate that they are the subject matter and grant experts. And I feel like this wouldn't pay for them to write a grant, but it would give us all an overview, and they could even meet with us and ask us questions on how we want to focus projects going forward. And they would only build us for time and materials too, so that we'd only pay for the portion of the cost that's used and that they spend time on. We do have sufficient funds in contractual and our contractual line item right now, so we don't need to do an NCO. That's not necessary to get started. I just would like the council's blessing to move forward with this so that we can do this sooner rather than later as we move forward with projects. And there are some new ones coming out, new funding sources coming out, and we have to look at if we're going to, you know, repeat the ones we already tried and try other ones, or what we need to do moving forward. So the next one is the law enforcement issue. So in addition to talking to the South Coast director when I was in town, I also talked to him today. They have discussed securing a few retired law enforcement officers who will fly over here just like they do in ADAC. They would come over on the jet every day. He says he's talked to four potentials. Problem is, it's going to cost about $45,000 for the season. And I know they've talked to Alaska Airlines for doing it to do it. And I know Alaska Airlines is not in favor of losing more than they already do by coming over here. One thing they can do is their essential air service contract is for 2 years, with the option of opting out of it in the second year. And if they decide to do that, they could go back in with their essential air service proposal and add that kind of money into it. I believe we need to take the approach of, you know, sort of cutting it off at the head and trying to see why we can't go back to how we were doing it before. So we're still working that angle too, but I have not heard the outcome of the DOI staff meeting with Murkowski's office. And Senator Keel is working on this as well with DOT and public safety. to try to see if there's any way they can wrestle up some funding if they decide to go with that option this year with retired law enforcement coming over and coming and going with the jet, basically. So that meeting was today, and I'm going to be hearing from, I think, Mr. Goins tomorrow. We've got our grant agreement signed with State Emergency Management to be part of the cybersecurity assessment. AML is going to pull the four of us together so we can see the details of how we move forward with the project. If we have to manage individual procurement or if we'll do it all jointly, but we're going to meet about the next step in those processes. Friday, we put the finishing touches on the aid to firefighter grant application to FEMA for the water tender. As you know, Lexapol wrote the narrative. Shelley and I edited a couple of times. Sol entered all the other data and information required by the application, and he pasted the narrative and uploaded it all. And he had participated in a webinar for the AFF when they were discussing prioritizing. They were talking about how they wanted to prioritize PPE grant funds rather than equipment. We didn't really know that at the time when we undertook the application process, but you know, it doesn't hurt to try. But this is another reason to secure some professional help from HDR to evaluate whether or not we have a shot at some of the grants and or whether we would just be spinning our wheels to put them forward. So we've done a lot of work on the borough petition and lands issues. We had a lot of comments going to the local boundary commission, as you all know. We're still trying to find out about PILT. It's really unofficial right now, but Dennis Gray seems to be sort of backpedaling on that 1% seasonal sales tax boundary. But he only did it in response to an email question from a reporter. He hasn't sent anything that's official. He did send an email to this reporter that based on their attorney, he was thinking it was just going to be within their city boundaries. I'm waiting to see what their response to the comments are that are due by April 1st, because if that's the case, half the people who were opposed to the petition were doing it based on what they had put out there about those boundaries and the taxation within those boundaries. So I went to the legislative winter meeting in Juneau. We had a lot of presentations from legislators, you know, budget analysts, department heads, and congressional representatives who were there. I had a meeting with Senator Keel and Representative Story, and I put forward all our concerns and our projects. And they're trying to float another PFAS bill this year, but they're not sure how exactly they're going to approach it. It'll be probably a little watered down, no pun intended, from last year to try to get it to pass, but it's just something the governor's being stubborn about for not any apparent reason, since it was a bipartisan bill. I went to a coastal meeting where the harbor masters presented and discussed some of the upcoming projects and funding streams for docks and harbors. I mean, Mike's right about the state owning the dock and having to do stuff, but there could potentially be other options with sort of reorganization of the floats and stuff too. So whatever we do, we'll have to do it and investigate it together. Hopefully we can, you know, get some people to look at all aspects of it and come up with the best solution. I brought copies around the Hill to our resolution opposing the Hoonah Borough petition and our resolution in support of HB 279 regarding have a seat on the local boundary commission to represent the unorganized borough. They did not adopt a couple of the proposed changes, but they did adopt a couple of the other ones, and it passed the House floor and it's on to the Senate now. So we hope to see that go through. They did not add a second member. Some folks were requesting a second member from the unorganized borough, but that did not get added. I testified at the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee hearing, where testimony was being provided mostly by Alaska rural communities on rural issues and projects in their community and their region. I can mail you the agenda if you want it, and the presentations of the conference are on the site on the Alaska Municipal League. Like to say, as Ben did, the audit is complete with the exception of the submission of the auditor's final letter. At this point, there's no negative findings, and we only had to find a few documents that weren't readily available. I'd like to commend Ben on having, for all intents and purposes, a seamless audit, and the letter and a review, if the auditors are available, will be provided at the next council work session. So that's really good news, and hats off to Ben for making it fairly simple. I attended an informal meeting on the formulation of a lands committee, with conservation being the primary goal. Others will talk about that later. We continue to have discussions about how to prolong the gravel pit. John Barry submitted a permit to the Army Corps of Engineers for the ditch relocation at the DRC in preparation for the expansion project. That takes a while to get that permit, so we wanted to do it sooner rather than later. There's an infrastructure development symposium April 2 through 5, which I hope to attend. It's a congressional infrastructure symposium. And saving the best for last, the city of Gustavus, the DRC, new recycling facility was included in one of six appropriations packages that Senator Murkowski was able to include, you know, several projects for Alaska communities. It was signed by President Biden on Saturday, and I included the email we received on this report in my report, so you could see the details, but you can also see how long the process is going to take. And hopefully, you know, there won't be such a shift in administration that this money gets, you know, yarded back for any reason. But it is for our new recycling facility. And it was really exciting news to get on a Friday afternoon after a really long week. So I'm really pleased that to report that so far, so good. And we're going to be getting a little over $3 million for that project. And that's my report, if you have any questions.
Well, I'll start by congratulating you, Kathy, on all the hard work that you did to bring that in, and also the $12,000 cyber security assessment grant that you obtained. Do other council members wish to speak up? No, I think that's all. I wanted to move on while we have you the opportunity. It's item number 15, the HDR CIP review. And so I ask council members if they could take turn to that. We were going to take that up while we've got you handy. Could you give us, I know you've talked about this a little bit, did you want to speak further on this review and how it would be beneficial?
Well, basically, like I said in my report, one of the benefits of this is that this company has in-house folks. They've got financial professionals, they've got engineers, they've got project managers, economists. I mean, they have a lot of people at hand. So no matter what grant you're trying to put together, they can, you know, they don't have to go do a bunch of research to figure out how to write something. They got in-house people they can just ask. And so they've also got very successful, you know, grant authors. And but I feel like, you know, we need this help. There's two more years left, and in the bilateral infrastructure law. And so I feel like this is money well spent. When I, months and months and months ago, I informed the council that we were going to have to spend a little money to make some money. And I think this is the right strategy for doing that. So I'd like to see it happen so we can engage them sooner rather than later.
And this is Shelley. I'd like to point out a list of the grants, wind grants in Alaska, that they've presented us with on page 8. Pretty significant number of grants. If there's no other questions, Councilmember Muscoviac, are you?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a motion for us to approve?
A resolution, yes. I move to approve resolution CY24-06, the City of Gustavus supporting but recommending amendment to House Bill 365. Oops, I read the wrong one. I read Mike's. Okay, I'm sorry. I'll backtrack here.
Okay.
I move to approve resolution CY24-07, supporting the continuation of the current Alaska Marine Highway Systems Advisory Operations Board.
Nope, we'll get you on that one pretty soon, but this is item 15, the very last one.
Oh, okay. Geez.
We don't have a resolution for that. We just want to approve for me to be able to go into an agreement with this group.
Okay. I move to approve HDR's scoping document to provide City of Gustavus with capital improvement plan project evaluation for grant competitiveness.
Okay.
And
I'll second it.
Okay. And Mike is a second. Okay. All right, so we have, the motion by Councilmember Muscoviac, seconded by Councilmember Taylor, move to approve HDR scoping document to provide City of Gustavus with capital improvement plan project evaluation for grant competitiveness. And let's see here. I think probably, Councilmember Muscoviac, did you want to speak in support of the motion at this time?
Well, I think it would be a good idea just to get some professional oversight of this sort of stuff. And like you say, Kathy does a lot of work, but we can't expect her to be an expert in everything, and council certainly isn't. So yes, I'll speak in support of that.
Okay. And are there any members of the public that would like to comment on this item at this time? No one in council chambers? I don't see any hands raised or microphones muted, unmuted. Okay. Is there any council debate on this matter? Okay, Vice Mayor Taylor.
Thanks, Vice Mayor Taylor here. I'm not sure this is necessarily debate. I'm curious about what we're looking at down the line as far as more details on potential costs. I guess I tend to think, you know, when we approach something like this, what's our best case scenario and what's our worst case scenario? And best case scenario is obviously we find $3 million to build a new DRC building, but except for we theoretically don't need that now. But I'm curious, I guess, what we could potentially be on the hook for with feasibly no grant to show for it down the line. I guess just $8,000 for that is kind of the maximum on this. Maybe I should rephrase this question now that I've kind of found my words. If we engage in further services from these contractors to actually write a grant, do we have any kind of, you said they're billing for labor and materials. What does that put us at for, is writing a grant cheaper or more expensive than researching what grant opportunities exist? I feel like I just don't have enough information to understand what the next jump in this progression is. And all of that said, I definitely still support the idea of us engaging in professional help, especially with so much money available. I'm just trying to fully understand what we'd be committing to kind of tacitly, I guess.
Well, I think that if we engage them, we would iron out the details. It would be not to exceed that amount. We would iron out the details of precisely what the deliverables were. This would not be for writing a grant. This would be because they are so in tune to all this stuff anytime anything opened up, they would be able to tell us. They'd be able to, they can do the cost benefit analysis, or, you know, a substitution thereof that a lot of these infrastructure grants are requiring. I mean, when I consulted with somebody a year and a half ago to ask them to do a cost benefit analysis for us if we needed it, and it was going to be over $5,000 just for that. So I'm feeling like they can give us good advice. I've sent them the list of all of our pending projects. I sent them our CIP. As soon as we can engage them, they will begin reviewing all of this stuff to see where we're at. They'll ask us pointed questions, about what it is exactly we're looking for. And the council will no doubt have to do a little work in reassessing some of that. And hopefully we come out with a plan and a product that they're going to be able to assist us with over time. Now, if we want to get them in a more complex project, like, you know, I was able to do, you know, the cybersecurity one, and with John Barry's help, we put together the one for the area-wide septic study. But there's some bigger ticket items that are, the processes are way more onerous that we might want to enlist them, like we did with Solstice. We had a grant writer help with some of these things in the past, but unfortunately they're too low staffed, and these people have a great reputation. They're doing work for, you know, Department of Transportation and department and other departments in the state. So this is not for writing grants. This is for identifying what's out there and helping us prioritize it going forward. Does that help?
Yeah, understood. I think maybe I didn't phrase my inquiry adequately. What I'm curious about is, so we approved this $8,000 to get their help, and it seems, you know, like a reputable agency that's obviously a leader in what they're trying to do. But if, are we then engaging them in also helping us write the grant afterwards? And what does that next step potentially cost?
I think it depends on the hourly rate, depends on which professionals. We would get a quote for each thing we engage them to do. So it wouldn't just be, oh, hey, yeah, that's a good idea. Could you go write a PIPD, you know, grant, and, you know, for, you know, new floats on the dock? Or could you go redo our request for our new composting facility that we already, you know, wrote a grant for? What could we do to make it better? Like, some stuff we already have in place, but they might be able to enhance it so it wouldn't cost as much. I don't have the hourly rates for that at this time because we're not there yet. And that doesn't mean you can't engage other folks or other grant writers. This is just sort of a professional assessment and overview.
Yeah, understood. I appreciate the additional context and stand, just to clarify, in support of this decision.
And Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes, I too totally support this overall concept of having help with the grants, understanding how complex it is. I'm just, though, as I'm looking through this document that they have, it's confusing to me as to whether it's a scoping document, or it doesn't seem to be as delineated as to what it is we're actually getting from them. And I've been reading through it, and there's some dates that are on the subtasks 2.3, assess projects according to eligibility. There's a line in there that talks about dates, but it says if a grant opportunity application deadline is expected prior to March 29th, 2024, HDR will notify the city of the grant opportunity and project recommendations no later than January 5th, 2024. So there's just some of the information in here seems.
Yeah. Weird. So I had asked her for this, and she was providing it to me, and she got pulled away to go down to some family thing in Seattle, but she sent it anyway. And so she may not have proofread it exactly right. She may mean that to be 2025. I could get her to clarify it. And this isn't, this is just describing what they're going to do. It's not the actual, I mean, it's the players, but we would have to iron out a specific contract with a not to exceed amount put in it. She was providing, I asked her to provide information on their successes so I could show, demonstrate that they're, you know, a good organization. So I did not notice that, or I would have asked her. And I can find that out from her if that will help.
So, well, I mean, I realize that, I mean, this is shows that they definitely are a professional organization and an overview. Will we get at some point, though, a more specific roadmap as to what we can be expecting from them that's more specific than this?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any more questions, Councilmember Taylor?
I think we got a kind of a minor problem in our motion where we say scoping document. It's really a proposal. Mm-hmm. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that we can just change, or do you want an amendment to change to correct that?
Madam Clerk?
Mrs. Clerk, can you make a motion to amend, and then they can accept it, and then we can move on with the amended motion?
Sure. So I move to amend the motion to strike the word scoping document and or the two words scoping document and replace them with the word proposal, since that's what it is.
This is Kyle Bishop. I second.
Okay, so we have a motion by Councilmember Taylor, seconded by Councilmember Bishop, to approve HDR's proposal to provide City of Gustavus with capital improvement plan project evaluation for grant competitiveness. Are we ready for the call of the question?
Madam Mayor, just for the future, when we have an amendment to a motion, we need to read with striking the words scoping document and replacing with proposal, and then you will continue on. And then they'll vote on that one.
Okay, would you like me to redo that?
Sure.
Okay. Okay, we have a motion to amend and a second by motion by Councilmember Taylor, seconded by Councilmember Bishop, to approve HDR's delete the two words scoping document, insert proposal to provide City of Gustavus with capital improvement plan project evaluation for grant competitiveness. Okay.
So now it'll go to public comment, council debate, and then we'll vote.
Thank you. Is there any public comment on this? Is there any, council comment?
Point of order, we don't do a second public comment for an amendment.
Okay. So there was none, so let's carry on.
Okay.
We already had public comments.
Right, so we're ready to vote. Yes, please.
All right. Councilmember Driscoll.
Yes.
Councilmember Patrick.
Yes.
Councilmember Koviac.
Yes.
Councilmember Bishop.
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor.
Yes.
Vice Mayor Taylor.
Yes.
And Madam Mayor.
Yes.
The motion passes. So now we will vote on the motion as amended as well. I know it sounds redundant, but that's it.
Is there a public comment?
Or no. Council comment.
Council comment? Council comment?
But yeah, I might.
Councilmember Taylor?
I might just, no, I think this is going to be very helpful, perhaps in finding grant opportunities that we've been missing for things like the Good River Bridge repairs that we've had difficulty with our grant applications for those that haven't been successful. Also for the bike path is another good one. But I think that we also need to be looking downstream of this. I hope we'll be successful. They will help us be successful. HDR is a reputable firm with a good track record in these things. But we're going to need, if we are successful, we're going to need to boost our capability of managing these projects within our city organization. And that's something we need to be figuring out, if we are successful, how we manage these projects and without a regular Department of Public Works. So that's something for us to be thinking about going forward. And we even have a problem with capacity in this community, the contracting capacity within the community is another shortfall that we have that makes it hard for us to, we can sometimes get the money for something, but can we actually build it? That's going to be the challenge.
Okay. Call for the question.
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Councilmember Patrick?
Yes.
Councilmember McCoviak?
Yes.
Councilmember Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
Motion passes.
And Madam Clerk, I seem to have deviated from the agenda a bit. Did we have public comment on non-agenda items?
No, ma'am. That's where we need to pick up next.
Okay. All right. Would the public like to comment on any non-agenda items at this time?
Marchbanks has his
hand raised. Okay. Go ahead, Justin. Marchbanks.
Am I off mute?
Yes. No, you're good.
Great. First, we all know that Kathy's a rock star. That's why we hired her. Mm-hmm. And we appreciate the job she's doing there. She's really done a lot of stuff in a really short time. But more so, I'd like to thank the council for, you know, allowing her to do what she needs to do. You know, she is very willing to travel and go to the meetings and do the things that need to be done, to be seen, to be heard. And she's very willing to do that. And, I would just like to encourage the council to continue to, you know, allow her to do what she needs to do for our city. And then the last thing is, this is kind of a personal item, I guess, but, it would be beneficial. Maybe I'm the only one, maybe I'm not, but it would be really something if we could stick to the 5 minutes on a lot of these committee reports. The back and forth chin wag is entertaining at times, but it becomes kind of, it just drags on a lot. And I know you council members want to get home and things like that. So it would be great if maybe the 5 minute thing could be held on to a little better. Again, thanks for the opportunity, and I appreciate everyone that volunteers there.
Thank you for your comments. Okay, would anyone else like to comment? Okay, oops, looks like we have Jim. Is this Jim Kearns? Is James's iPhone? You're still on mute.
Oh, there we go. Okay, there we go. Sorry, I pushed the wrong button. Yeah, I didn't know if this was the time for non-agenda items, but I've been listening and I never heard that. So I think, is this the time?
Yes, it is. My apologies.
Okay, it's okay. Then I can talk?
Yes.
Okay, hey, thanks so much. Hey, I appreciated Leah's comments. And I promised myself that I'm going to talk about this every council meeting, so you're going to hear me a lot. But that dock is certainly something that we need to work on. And I know Mike Taylor, you know, said it's a state dock, obviously, and we all know that. But you guys are the government. You are the entity in our town that can, you know, put more pressure on or more have more input into what goes on. And I mean, I'm going to do everything that I can to get going. I've already talked to people and I'm going to keep talking. But if we get the support of the city council to say, yes, we do need to do something, and we will get put our weight behind it to help. And I'm not saying we have to put money in it right now, but I'm just saying that we put the weight behind it. I think there's a way we can put that in, just like Leah was saying. I think there's a way we can put a breakwater in that goes in between the posts that are already in. And I've been scoping it out for quite a while. So I'd love to give you more input on it, but I won't do it. I mean, you have to have a piece of paper, but it kind of goes along with the original design. And I know Mike saw it because I remember coming into the office when he was mayor and saying, Mike, that's the one. That's the one we need with the breakwater on it. So anyway, that's number one. Number two, I'm going to keep talking about this one too. And I've talked to a couple of people. Wilson Road was a state road. They called it, when we were here before, when I was younger, they called it an unmaintained state road. It should still be a state road. And that way, the state can start taking care of it and they can pave the darn thing so we can go down that road, because you all know what it's like, because every road in town's like that. But not every road has the critical infrastructure that this one has, because the gravel pit is down at the end of Wilson Road and it is always, you know, it's going to be a busy place and it always gets heavy use. APT has a hydro plant out at the Rink Creek Road that's a heavy, you know, a heavier use and a sort of an essential use that goes down that road. And then the end of the airport. I mean, that's where they put this, that's where they staged all the paving that they did, was right there at the end of the airport. And so that is also a safety issue. So that might be my time. So anyway, thank you so much for your time. Keep it on your minds. I'll keep reminding you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate your comments.
Okay.
Anyone else? All right. Okay. And there are no items on the for the consent agenda. We're up for the ordinance for public hearing. We have one item, which I'll ask Ben to come forward. And this is item FY24-11 NCO, Returning Unused Capital Project Funds, introduced February 20th, 2024.
Thank you, Shelley. Ben Sadler, Treasurer. Yes, so we had three projects that we closed: the Hardin Beach Trail, the radio tower. No, it wasn't the radio tower, the septage storage facility and the cul-de-sac improvement project. And so we're just returning those funds from capital, current capital improvement AMLIP account to long-term capital improvement AMLIP account.
Okay. And the time is, looks like it's 8:57, agenda item number six is open for public testimony. Do any members from the public wish to speak? Hey, I see one hand up, Justin Marchbanks.
Yeah, those projects came in under budget and were able to get that money back into the system, and that's because we were able to work well with Mike and make good plans and do things efficiently. So Mike does a great job with what he does.
Okay, thank you, Justin. Would anyone else like to comment? Okay, I don't see any more public testimony. Let's see. So the hearing, the item number, before I get confused, FY24-11 NCO, Returning Unused Capital Projects Funds, introduced 220-224, as testimony is closed at 9:58. Is there a motion to adopt the agenda item?
Real quick, Shelley, it's 8:58.
Thank you. I guess I sprang forward again. Thank you, Ben. Okay. So we need a motion to approve.
Councilmember Bishop here. I move to approve FY24-11 NCO returning unused capital project funds.
Okay, is there a second?
Brian Taylor here. I'll second that.
Okay. Okay, Councilmember Bishop moved and Councilmember Taylor seconded the motion to, if I can find it again. FY24-11 NCO returning unused capital project funds, introduced February 20th, 2024. Okay. Is there any public comment on this item?
We had that. We're on to council debate, Madam Mayor.
Yep.
Thank you. I'm getting tired. Is there any council comment? Council debate? Yes, Councilmember Driscoll.
Yes, this is Councilmember Driscoll. So I realize this is a like a boilerplate that you're filling in, but from a perspective of a council member, as I read these things, and maybe for the public, I would appreciate if there would be more information that told us what it was we were returning the money on. Just as I look through it, it's just to be, I don't know, like I'm great to see this happening, but I think it's one of our jobs is to make sure we know what it is that happens. And so like it says that it's just so generic. It would be helpful to me as a council member if it was read and it included that this was the project from the turnaround or this was the project for the Beach Harden Trail, just so that it's just more information I think is helpful. So, I mean, I'm going to totally approve this, but just going through in forward, I'm wondering if there would be a way to make these just a tad more clear and specific. Thanks.
Can I speak to this? So that's a question.
Okay, Councilmember Taylor.
Thank you for recognizing me. This is Vice Mayor Taylor. I asked the same question in the work session, and Ben didn't have the document at that point in the packet for us. But if you scroll up a couple pages in your packet, the digital document, it's page 41. You'll see four pending transfers, and it took me a second to learn how to read this. But if you can put it together, he's got the returning unused funds from and then you've got the four project account numbers there, CP22-03-04, CP21-03, and CP23-02. And then you can map those to the table up above where the capital project has its code and then its name and then the amount of funds remaining. So a little bit of legwork, and it's not all right in the NCO right there, but you're definitely able to go through and find where those four transfers are. Would you like me to show you? I've got it on my screen here. So it's in a different document. This is in his treasurer's report that he gives us every month. So he's got these four pending transfers and he's returning the unused funds. And then these are the project codes and that's how much money is left. And then you can map it up to here to what project it was and how much, because these are all the current open projects and that's how much they have remaining. So then these are, it's I acknowledge it's a little bit of legwork and kind of mapping everything out, but you can look at it and see that 2203 is the Beach Hardened Trail, which had $13,000. 2204 is the septage storage facility, which had $5,608. 21-03 is Good River Bridge repairs, which had $3,665. And CP2302 is the marine facility vessel, which had $5,972. Let's see if I might have misread that. 2302. Yeah, that was a cul-de-sac improvement. Sorry, I misread that. 5,972. So yeah, it's all possible to find that out. And I know Ben was so gracious in explaining that to me last meeting. So I wanted to demonstrate that I had learned.
Okay. Yes, go ahead, Ben.
So, and I'd just like to add to that. Thank you, Brian. You explained it well. I left out one thing when I said what we were closing out. That's the Good River Bridge repairs. Like I explained the last two times. That money wasn't actually there in the first place. It was a mistake on my part. It was a negative number, so it shouldn't have been there. But because we NCO'd it, I needed to NCO it back. So that's why I didn't say we closed out that project. That project is still ongoing. And the reason why I created this sheet was to so you guys could have that information. The NCOs are dictated in ordinance, how they look. And then I end up sending that off to the bank to have the money moved around. So adding in all that additional information would just make it more convoluted for the bank. So that's why I created this spreadsheet so that you guys would have that information without changing the NCOs. Do you have more, Janine? You look like you're okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ben. Are we ready for the question? Okay. The question is on the adoption of FY24-11 NCO returning unused capital project funds introduced February 20, 2024 to approve returning unused capital project funds. Madam Clerk, could you do the roll call vote?
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Councilmember Patrick?
Yes.
Councilmember Koviac?
Yes.
Councilmember Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
And Madam Mayor?
Yes.
The motion passes.
Okay, and moving on to item number 7, to approve CY24-06 resolution by the City of Gustavus supporting but recommending amendment of House Bill 365. And this was the, I guess I could speak quickly to it. We talked about it at the work session, recommending the amendment to extend power cost equalization credits to schools. The PCE applies to the first 750 kilowatt hours that each resident purchases each month. Additionally, communities get an allotment of PCE. Gustavus has recently been using approximately 3,500 kilowatts of its 46,060 kilowatt PCE allotment with a difference of 510,720 kilowatts per year. And so, and rural community school buildings serve as multipurpose community facilities supporting a broad range of public uses and purposes. And this bill has been introduced to enable schools to qualify for PCE disbursements from PCE endowment. Okay, do we have a motion?
Madam Mayor, this Taylor, I move to approve. Sure, I'm looking at the right one here. I move to approve resolution CY24-06, City of Gustavus supporting but recommending amendment of House Bill 365.
I'll second that. I mean, a quick point of order. I know at some point we need to read this resolution. I'm not sure if that should have happened already, but we don't have to read a resolution.
This is Shelley Owens. No, we no longer need to do that. We have it was in training that the city clerk attended, and we have a document that describes it, that we no longer need to do that.
Wow.
Because we posted on the we posted on the website. It's posted for 2 weeks. Did you want to address this?
No. You did great.
Thank you.
Phenomenal. Love okay. to hear that. Well, yeah. Pardon my interruption, please.
That's okay. All right. So we have a, let's see. I can't remember whether I said this. Yes, I did say it already. Okay. So is there public comment on this item? Okay. Seeing no public comment, would the council like to debate the item? Nope. They're looking sleepy. Okay. Are we ready for the question? And do I need to read it again? Yes. Okay. So this is the motion to approve resolution CY24-06, the City of Gustavus supporting but recommending amendment of House Bill 65, H-365. Madam Clerk, could we have a roll call?
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Councilmember Patrick?
Yes.
Councilmember Koviac?
Yes.
Councilmember Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay. And Councilmember Muscoviac, I think I've got you up to do a quick explanation of the next two items. The next one up, item number 8, to approve CY24-07 resolution supporting the continuation of the current Alaska Marine Highway Systems Advisory Opinion Operations Board. Is there a motion?
Sure. I read it once before, but I'll read it again. I move to approve resolution CY24-07 supporting the continuation of the current Alaska Marine Highway Systems Advisory Operations Board.
Is there a second?
I'll second. Kyle Bishop.
Okay, Kyle Bishop. Okay, Kyle. And I can address it briefly. The governor had quite a list of executive orders that he has introduced that are going to the legislature. This is one of them. He recently opposed Executive Order 131 that would allow the governor to appoint the entire board, arguing that a board that is more aligned would be better to move more quickly, getting things done. And the resolution talks about the importance of the ferry system to the community of Gustavus. And we all agree that there's work to be done to ensure the system continues to provide its essential service, and that the element of diversity in the board under the current system, which may be in the best long-term interest of maintaining the service of the Alaska Marine Highway System provides, might disappear and the board could potentially become entirely politicized. Okay, see. Do members of the public wish to comment on this at this time? Okay, I see no hands raised. Would council members like to speak to this item?
This is Jim Muscoviac. Yes, the legislature will be voting tomorrow on overriding these executive orders. So this is pretty important to get done tonight. And if we pass this, I talked to Liesl earlier, and Shelley, as soon as you sign it, she can send it to Senator Keel and Andy Stories and probably Sarah Hannon's office as well. Thanks. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Jim. Are they all going to be voted on at the same time in the House session?
I think it's a joint session. They all have to vote on it. And I don't think they take all of the executive orders in bulk. I think they take them one at a time. But it's scheduled for tomorrow.
Okay, thank you. We will get it. If it passes, we will get it on the road. Okay, are we ready for the question?
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
Sorry, just I would send it to Representative Hemschutz and a couple other Southeast folks as well. Not just our delegation. I'd send it to Senator Stedman and Representative Hemschutz too.
Thank you, Kathy.
Kathy, I'm sorry, this is Clerk Barker. Could you please email me those names so I can add them to my email list, please?
Yes, I will.
I can help her with it too. And we're ready for the roll call vote.
Can you restate what the motion is before we do the vote?
Yes. The motion, which was made by Councilmember Taylor, approved by Vice Mayor Taylor, to approve Resolution C.
Madam Mayor, It was made by Jim Muscoviac and seconded by Kyle Bishop.
Okay, I was reading number 7. Thank you. The motion was to approve Resolution CY24-07, supporting the continuation of the current Alaska Marine Highway Systems Advisory Operations Board.
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Councilmember Patrick?
Yes.
Councilmember Muscoviac?
Yes.
Councilmember Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
The motion passes.
Moving on to item 9, to approve CY2408, resolution regarding the updating of the U.S. Forest Service's Tongass Land Management Plan. Councilmember Muscoviac, do you have a motion?
I move to approve Resolution CY24-08 regarding the updating of the U.S. Forest Service's Tongass Land Management Plan.
Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay,
Vice Mayor Taylor.
Okay. And the motion to approve Resolution CY24-08 regarding the updating of the U.S. Forest Service's Tongass Land Management Plan, made by Councilmember Muscoviac, seconded by Vice Mayor Taylor. Is there public comment? No public comment. Council comment? No council comment. Are you ready for the question, Madam Mayor? I mean, Madam Clerk?
I thought I was getting a promotion for a moment. All right.
Councilmember Driscoll.
Yes.
Sorry, I had to get my page up. Councilmember Patrick.
Yes.
Councilmember Makoviak.
Yes.
Councilmember Bishop.
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor.
Yes.
Vice Mayor Taylor.
Yes.
Madam Mayor.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay, this next one, we will take them one at a time, but they were, but they're interconnected. The first is item number 10, CY24-09 resolution for Harbor Tract B2 purchase. Okay, Councilmember Taylor, do you have a motion?
Yes, Madam Mayor, Ms. Taylor. I move to approve resolution CY24-09 for Harbor Tract B2 purchase.
Is there a second?
Kyle Bishop, I'll second.
Okay, council member. All right. The motion to approve resolution CY24-09 for Harbor Tract B2 purchase made by Councilmember Taylor, seconded by Councilmember Bishop. Is there public comment at this time? Is there a council comment? Go ahead.
Yes, this resolution just gives us the authority, gives the administration the authority to negotiate with DNR to purchase the Harbor Tract B2 and also to purchase the submerged lands out to the center of the channel that are in front of Harbor Tract B2 and B3. And that would put the entire harbor and the submerged lands to the middle of the channel in city ownership. So we would no longer need to manage it following our outdated CRMA that is due to expire in 2027 anyway. So this would give the city full responsibility for the harbor and would actually give us a little more freedom to make changes and to do some things there that are not allowed under the CRMA. For example, if the city wanted to permit a boat repair operation or something like that, which was once proposed there some years ago, but couldn't be done under the old CRMA. So things like that would be possible. So this gives us new control or much improved control over the harbor, and we can restructure our approach to operations there pretty much as we wish in the future.
Okay. And because of the council comment, I'll go ahead and read it. It's motion to approve resolution CY2409 for Harbor Tract B2 purchase made by motion by Councilmember Taylor, seconded by Councilmember Bishop. Call for the question, Madam Clerk.
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Councilmember Patrick?
Yes.
Councilmember Makoviak?
Yes.
Councilmember Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay, we're moving down to item 13. We're going to skip two that we will return to, but I wanted to address this at the same time because this is the companion to the resolution. It is to approve the CIP project development form for purchase of Salmon River Harbor Tract B2 and adjacent river tidelines. And I was just going to ask if you could just give a brief summary of how this is.
Okay. This is just approves the city to proceed with this as a project, and we would have to negotiate with DNR. We have to file an application. We have to pay a fee that I think is $400, and then we may find we have to do some surveying. Although the land tract B2 is fully surveyed, we may need to survey the submerged land portion, which they just go out to about mid-channel and take a GPS reading, I think is how they do it. The submerged lands portions, according to our information from DNR, would be or could be transferred at no charge to the city, but we would have to pay for track B2 at some price that they have yet to determine. But it would be we would purchase it as a public and charitable transfer from the state, so that gives us a lower cost than what might otherwise be the value on the open market. So this just relates to the resolution and gives us the authority to begin to negotiate that, but it makes no commitment actually to buy it. We have not appropriated any funds for it yet.
Okay, thank you. And Vice Mayor Taylor.
Yeah, I move to approve CIP project development form for purchase of Salmon River Harbor Tract B2 and adjacent river tidelands.
And is there a second?
I'll second it. This is Janine.
Okay. Councilmember Driscoll. Vice Mayor Taylor made the motion, seconded by Councilmember Driscoll, to approve the CIP project development form for purchase of Salmon River Harbor Tract B2 and adjacent river tidelines. Public comment. Is there public comment? No public comment. Council comment or debate? Seeing none. Okay, are we ready for the vote? Yes, we are. Madam Mayor?
Member Driscoll?
Yes.
Councilmember Patrick?
Yes.
Councilmember Makoviak?
Yes.
Councilmember Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay, moving back to item 11, approve the CIP project development form for purchasing of a Lucas chest compression device. This is one that the fire chief talked to us about at the work session. The Lucas device is a mechanical chest compression device replacing manual chest compressions, which is the most labor-intensive task in CPR. And it's used by Airlift Northwest and has been approved by the medical director, EMS medical director, Dr. Vaught. Do we have a motion?
Yes, this is Councilmember Driscoll. I move to approve the CIP project development form for purchasing the Lucas chest compression device.
Is there a second?
Councilmember Bishop.
Okay. All right. We have a motion by Councilmember Driscoll, seconded by Councilmember Bishop. I move to approve CIP project development form for purchasing of a Lucas chest compression device. And I always forget that. Is there public comment? Is there a council comment, council debate? Good. All right. Madam Clerk, could we have the roll call?
One second, you went faster than I was anticipating. That's a good thing. That's getting closer to 10 o'clock. All right, Council Member Driscoll.
Yes.
Council Member Patrick.
Yes.
Council Member Makoviak.
Yes.
Council Member Bishop.
Yes.
Council Member Taylor.
Yes.
Vice Mayor Taylor.
Yes.
Madam Mayor.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay, folks, looks like we are down to the last. We have a possible discussion item, but this is the last item to vote on. This is item number 12, to approve CIP project development form for heat pump installations for city buildings. Do we have a motion?
I'm Rachel Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
I move to approve the CIP project development form for heat pump installations for city buildings.
And is there a second?
I'll second it, Ms. Taylor.
Okay. All right. We have a motion by Councilmember Patrick, a seconded by Councilmember Taylor, to approve CIP project development form for heat pump installations for city buildings. Is there public comment? Okay, is there council comment or debate? Okay, I see none. And Madam Clerk?
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Councilmember Patrick?
Yes.
Councilmember Mikowiak?
Yes.
Councilmember Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay, that brings us to an item that was erroneously listed as an action item, but we has been changed to just a discussion category. Shall we hold this over until next month? Or should we have a brief discussion about this?
Yes, if anybody has questions about where we have are, okay. We did discuss a little bit in our work session, and we don't have any action plan on this, but we have a citizens ad hoc group that is has been working on a resolution that we hope to have on the agenda next month to establish a land advisory committee to provide support for and policy recommendations and so forth for the management of conservation lands the city owns or has a cooperative management agreement on, that sort of thing.
Okay, thank you, Councilmember Taylor. Does anyone else want to comment about it? Okay, I see that. This brings us to city council reports. Not to be confused with council questions and comments. Do council members wish to make a report on special projects? They can do so now.
This is Jim Mikowiak. Can I talk?
Oh, you sure can, Jim. Go ahead.
Okay. So Safe Streets and Roads for All, we applied for a grant. It was denied. We worked with a consulting firm looking over our shoulder, and we did everything according to, what they recommended. And turns out that there's a sequence here, and you apply for a planning grant, and then once you get that, you apply for a demonstration grant, then you apply for an implementation grant, and we pretty much applied for an implementation grant and were denied. So there's another round going on. There's quite a bit of money left in it, and so I think we should apply again. And there were two communities that are similar to Gustavus that did receive grants from Safe Routes, Safe Streets and Roads for All. And that is Whittier and Haines. So I contacted them, and they sent me their narratives that they submitted. And I'll put something together. I don't think it has to be very complicated. And then the council can decide whether to apply again here.
Good. Thank you, Jim. And also for your help in writing some of the resolutions for this month, too. I think that we have some other projects, flower projects, and possibly Zoom analysis of the Zoom system. Maybe we can have reports next month, unless you all would like to talk about those things now. Councilmember Driscoll?
Well, I just wanted to say, because it was quickly stated last time about the fact that the city's going to become 20 years old on April 1st. Mm-hmm. And so I'm working on with Liesl on a 20-year anniversary open house here at City Hall on the April 1st, which is a Monday. And so we have a work session that day, so it will be at 4 to 6 prior to the next work session.
Okay.
And so just wanted to make sure people know of that.
Thank you for working on that.
Mm-hmm. And I have been doing some work on the flowers, and I wanted to talk with you a little bit about the budget on it, but maybe we can do that at some other time.
Okay. Good. You're moving on. We are up to item 15, coffee with council. Councilmember Patrick and Bishop, would you like to talk to us about this?
Sure. I'll give a quick overview of the process and the document that we're looking at here. I won't go through every item line for line because it's 9:30. But thanks to Liesl for putting this together and the council debate the discussion that ensued last week at the work session on January 27th, Rachel Patrick and I had an informal kind of Q&A sit down at the Fireweed Gallery. We called it Coffee with Council. We got a lot of really good input from the public, including some questions and answers. Together, Rachel and I put together a report. Rachel put together a report And I added 13 to 22 characters to the entire document because our notes matched up pretty well and she typed it all up. That said, I just wanted to kind of look at this process. I think it worked really well with us sitting down, being able to hear everything, not necessarily have all the answers, but jot down notes as quickly as we could, come back, report to the council. And then even though I wasn't at the last work session, it looks like there was a good hearty discussion about the items that were kind of left in space that we didn't exactly address with answers from ourselves. And so if anyone wants to look at that in greater detail, this document is out there. It's in the packet. It can become more available.
I can separate it out and I can add it onto our correspondence page, which would probably be the easiest place for people to find it. And then I'll also post it at our three locations around town.
Okay.
And it's also in the recording. And so on this document, if you have access to the packet, you can click the link to look at the recording, and it was so neatly transcribed here with minutes. So if you have, you know, any more detail you want on any specific questions, feel free to take a look at that. Is there anything you want to add, Rachel?
Just that the next coffee with council is going to be at the Alaska Seaplanes, Dizzy Moose, which is the coffee shop in there. I did not know that was the name of it. It's going to be Saturday, March 16th, 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. It's going to be hosted by Brian Taylor and Mike Taylor.
And they have a very spiffy little thing. What do you call these things?
Very nice flyer.
Flyer, thank you. I don't function after 9. Okay.
Do the hosts of our next coffee with council have anything they want to add or tease to the next one?
This is Vice Mayor Taylor. I would just say I wrote hot takes on the flyer for a reason. So if you have something that's bugging you, bring it on down and let's chat about it and see what we can't do.
Brian was going to do the whole meeting with AI. And it would generate a picture of us with the people and would have a list of their questions and our answers, and we'd call it good.
It's impressive. Okay.
I'm glad you shot his idea down.
Did he? And you guys thought it was me talking here tonight?
All right. Okay. Well, that brings us to the mayor's report. And I don't really have anything to say except for the up and coming events, because there hasn't been too much time between the last meeting and now. The save the date, you'll be seeing this flyer around for Monday, April 1st, 2024 at City Hall. And thanks to everyone that has been listening in. It looks like most of you hung with us tonight. It's been a long night. I think we had an 88-page package and a lot of work tonight. So this brings us to council questions and city council questions and comments. If any of you have additional questions and comments that are not part of the agenda, and same thing, public comment on non-agenda items. If any members of the public would like to speak up now, I guess I just wanted to raise one idea that I had about, and I just wanted to check in with council and see what you think. Sometimes I've been hearing from people that they're a little disappointed that they can't speak during work session. And we're pretty flexible in work sessions. And if we have time, I would like to introduce a public comment section if there are no strong opinions otherwise. I see at least one head nodding. Are we receptive to that? Good. Sounds like that's an okay. We'll see how the agenda works, and if there's time, we would welcome people to be able to speak to us more informally during our work sessions as well as our more structured general meetings. Thanks, everyone. So go ahead, Councilmember Driscoll.
So I just want to support that. I think we've had some really good work sessions when we've had a topic that we've discussed and we've asked people to come in to give us information. And so I totally support having more input at the work sessions, especially, but maybe not always, but especially when it's a topic that we're grappling with, and the more input we can get, the better.
I agree. And we're moving, I guess, gradually towards more transparency and communications. It's always more challenging and takes more time, but we get a lot of good information that way, I think. Thank you very much to City Clerk tonight for guiding us through. And good night, everyone. See you next time.
ChatGPT Jim signing off.
Okay, thank you, Jim. I'm sorry, 9:37? 9:37.
It's 10:30 here. Good night.
Good night, Kathy.
Good night, Kathy. I'm